Before we get started, a quick word from me, Julio Ricardo Varela, founder and publisher and executive director of the Latino Newsletter. Interviewing a candidate does not mean we are endorsing that candidate. As a 501c3 nonprofit newsroom, we're offering this conversation strictly for civic information purposes only. Our team has reached out and will continue to reach out to other candidates in the California governor's race. We are also on the media list of several of these campaigns, and if any candidate or campaign wants to speak with us about this election, they can just reach us at editor@thelatinonewsletter.org. We take elections seriously, and we also take democracy seriously, and our community deserves to hear directly from the people asking for their votes. So enjoy the podcast with our host, Michelle Zacarias.
Welcome back to the Latino Newsletter podcast. I'm your host, Michelle Zacarias. On today's episode, we have Dr. Butch Ware, a dedicated public servant and community-focused leader running for the governor of California as a Green Party candidate. Dr. Ware is also a professor at UC Santa Barbara. He received a PhD from the University of Pennsylvania and trained in African and African-American history and Islamic intellectual history. Dr. Ware's campaign is centered on restoring affordability and opportunity across California. He's a strong supporter of accessible healthcare and quality education and believes in investing in a better future rooted in people power. Thank you so much for being here.
Honor, privilege, and a pleasure. Apologizing in advance for the fact that I'm losing my voice. Had 4 media appearances yesterday, but we'll try to get through.
Okay, well, let's get into kind of like the most recent update. A Sacramento judge rejected your lawsuit against California Secretary of State Shirley Weber's office, and you were seeking to get on the June primary ballot for governor, but the court concluded that your campaign did not file the correct tax returns in time to qualify. What does that mean for the people who want to continue to support your campaign? Will they still be able to vote for you?
Absolutely. Well, you'll still be able to vote for us on June 2nd, one way or the other. May 4th is when the ballots go out. May the 4th be with you, because we are leading a rebel insurrection against this corrupt empire. What happened in the court case was really astonishing. And just to be clear, there's a private citizen that is filing their own separate suit against that court. We are filing an appeal in the circuit court because the judge's decision was a gross miscarriage of justice. And then we're also preparing a federal suit. So we are going to pursue appeals at 3 separate levels. And if they continue to cheat to keep us off the ballot and manage to somehow write us off the ballot, you can write us right back in. Which where are the 2 most dangerous words in the English language for the duopoly? And so they don't want it to appear on the ballot, but we can fix that. And I just want to say a quick word about the case. Our lawyers were actually able to demonstrate. So it's not that I didn't submit the tax returns. We submitted the tax returns. They said that you need to have copies of unredacted and redacted tax returns. The unredacted is for their records. Redacted is for the public record. So you can go online right now and find redacted tax returns, names, phone numbers, addresses, stuff like that, removed for the 60 candidates that made the ballot. You find in those files right now, dozens of redaction errors, And those people stayed on the ballot. They claimed that I had 1 redaction error on 1 piece of paper in 130 pages of filing and another redaction error on another page of 130 pages of filing. My phone number was left unredacted on 1, and my business name was overredacted on another. They gave me 10 minutes to correct this so-called redaction error. They sent me an email at 4:50 p.m. and said, you'll be eliminated from the ballot if you don't correct it by 5 p.m.
Wow.
Yeah, that's right. It's really that bad. And then what, and so we went into, because this was insane. So we went into the court, contested this. What my lawyer actually was able to demonstrate is 2 things that we didn't know even before they had made this absurd request. Number one, they actually had full and complete copies of the tax returns without any errors in them in their possession the whole time. And they entered them into evidence themselves, so that the Secretary of State put the incriminating evidence into the court record themselves. They had those 2 lines that I mentioned, they had copies of those in their possession that didn't have those quote unquote errors on them. So they had full files the whole time. And 2, they introduced a falsified email thread into evidence, because one of the reasons why there was this long back and forth is that their initial request for us to send in these documents was non-grammatical. It couldn't be read or followed. It said, no, not redacted form, not submitted. And we were all like, huh? What does that mean? So later they went in and actually doctored the email thread to make it look like their initial document request was legible and comprehensible. The judge was completely unmoved by the fact that they had doctored evidence. And in point of fact, they had the documents that they were requiring in their possession the whole time on time, because that judge was sent there to do a hit, just the same way that that bureaucrat was sent to try to find a needle in a haystack, because you can go online right now and find dozens of those errors in the Libertarian candidate and many, many others. The difference is that I am polling right now 5 points behind the Democrat leaders, Tom Steyer, Katie Porter, and Eric Swalwell. And I'm polling 8 points behind Bianco and Hilton for the outright lead. And both the Democrats and the Republicans, but especially Gavin Newsom's administration, they want me off the ballot because I'm dangerous.
So, you know, I think that segues right into my next question about what inspired you to run for governor in California as a Green Party candidate as opposed to any other party.
I was the Green Party vice presidential candidate in 2024. There isn't another candidate in the Democrat or Republican field that has received as many votes for a national office as I have. So I ran as a Green Party candidate for governor in the state of California because one of the things that people said is, well, where's the Green Party between presidential elections, right? You heard this a lot. And it's a disingenuous argument insofar as the latest figures actually show that over the last 3 years, Green Party candidates have won 57% of the elections in which we have stood for office at mayor or lower. They say, how come you guys don't run for lower office? We do. And we win. We beat teams blue and red together when there's no big money involved in the race. But when there's money involved, big money, that the Kamala raised $1.5 billion over her 108 days in office, it's much harder for us to compete. So I wanted to run for governor in the state of California to build the political infrastructure. And because this primary leaves them very, very vulnerable to actually beating them.
You've said numerous times that you've intentionally chosen to break away from traditional bipartisan party politics. How do you see yourself as being able to represent individuals from all sides of the political spectrum who reside in California?
Right now, 63% of registered voters conclude that the two parties do such a, quote, poor job, that's the language of the polling, that we need an independent third party. Nationwide, 48% of people identify themselves as independents, 25% as Democrats, 25% as Republicans. And yet, we are constantly being propagandized to believe that this is a country that is split between red states and blue states, red counties and blue counties, when the reality is that that is a propaganda machine by the corporate media, because half of Americans don't identify with either of those two parties because those two parties don't serve ordinary people. Everybody knows that we need an independent third party, and yet people allow themselves to be gaslit into voting for these two parties time and time again. And the thing is that the reality, if you were to make a Venn diagram of the donor base of the Republicans and the Democrats, so Venn diagram, two separate circles, right? One circle, because the donor base, AIPAC, right? The Israel lobby, Raytheon, Lockheed Martin, Boeing, General Dynamics, Northrop Grumman, the weapons manufacturers, they donate to both parties. All of the major corporations donate to both parties, and who funds you runs you. And so the truth is that those two parties stage a fake culture war in public to get you arguing about things that have nothing to do with their money or power. And in the Green Party, we don't care who you pray with or who you lay with. Your rights are sacred, and representative democracy is supposed to represent you, not billionaires and corporations. So we're here for all of those people that are sick and tired and fed up of Democrats and Republicans banging on each other like children and then colluding behind closed doors for bipartisan ICE raids, for bipartisan warmongering in Palestine and Iran and other places. They are playing in our faces, and your average Californian is sick and tired of it and just wants grownups in the room who think that their job is to represent ordinary working class people, not a tiny handful of billionaires that run both Team Red and Team Blue.
Right. And I think, you know, in the ideal universe, like, that is very accurate to how people are feeling very fatigued by the current state of politics. There's a lot of studies right now that are showing that people are disengaged from voting as well. And I know your campaign's mantra has been kind of bringing power back to the people, but how does that effectively happen in a state that's home to, one, the nation's largest homeless population, as well as home to some of the richest people in the world, have the fourth largest economy, right? How do you reconcile with that kind of wealth disparity?
I'll give you the figures. 186 billionaires in the state of California and 187,000 people sleep on the streets every night. And I just want to be clear, especially for the liberal or traditional Democrat voters that are listening to this right now. Team Blue did that, right? There have been super majorities from the Democrats in this state for the last 30 years and majorities in the state for the last 60 years. And we have the highest wealth inequalities of any state in the union. And we are tied for the highest pure poverty levels with Louisiana. So people are sick and tired of the money and the resources going upwards, and they want somebody to serve ordinary people. You talked about the homelessness crisis. My father was a locksmith with a sixth grade education. My mom was a 15-year-old teenage mother pregnant with me, told by her high school guidance counselor to abort the child because she was pregnant by a Black man. And I was in and out of public housing, shelters, living in my dad's locksmith van sometimes throughout my youth. I do not see homelessness as a public nuisance. I see it as a public policy failure. It is a failure to serve ordinary people. We know that every time there's a $100 median increase in the average rent, the homelessness rate increases by 9%. We know that if we had universal single-payer health care that was comprehensive of mental health treatment and addiction treatment, that would cut out a fundamental contributing factor to the homelessness crisis. But we can't get those things because quite literally the Democrats actually passed single-payer health care in 2006 and 2008 when Schwarzenegger was governor because they knew he would veto it. And then they proceeded to take over the state house in the 20 years in between and he can never get it passed. Gavin Newsom said he was going to get us universal health care in 2022. And then when he got in office, the healthcare industry laid $2.7 million in donations down on the Democrat Party, and they would not bring universal healthcare to a vote. So who funds you runs you. They are bought out by special interests, and it takes somebody from outside the system. We don't accept corporate donations.
Yeah, and you've been very vocal and outspoken about your disdain for Governor Newsom. Obviously, that's no secret, but he's not running, right? And I do want to shift the conversation a little bit to the poll. We have the most recent polls show a couple of things, right? It shows, one, that the Republican candidate, Steve Hinton, Chad Bianco, are currently leading the race. And then three Democratic candidates, Eric Swalwell, Katie Porter, and Tom Steyer, right? Each around 10% of likely Democratic voters. Now, I believe your recent numbers show that you're about at 5%. Is that correct?
Yep.
How would you respond? Because I know they're traditionally your supporters lean more left. How would you respond to people who might say a Green Party candidate like yourself would likely split the vote, right? I'm sure you've heard this a lot, but I think there's this fear that you kind of referred to earlier that this will result in a Republican victory.
It's a common misconception. The reality is that in the 2024 presidential election, the last two polls that came out before the vote actually showed that we were getting more voters from Team Red than we were getting from Team Blue. The majority of Green Party voters are people that wouldn't vote for either of those two corrupt parties under normal circumstances. But the Democrats are absolutely fearful of my candidacy specifically because they know the appeal that this campaign has, especially in Black and Brown and Muslim communities. So they are fearful that it's going to cut out an important part of their base. Let me be clear. It's not my job to protect their sorry, mediocre corporate candidates that everyone hates. And it's not my job to consolidate their power for them. They need to decide amongst themselves who their Democrat candidate is. And I'm not going to protect the very people that are trying to knock me off the ballot today because Republicans try to steal elections after the election. Bush did that in 2000 with Gore. Trump did that. Democrats try to steal the election before the election by knocking people out that they know can beat them. And yes, In January, we had a 5% polling number. In December, we had a 2% polling number. We don't know what our current polling number is because we don't have any corporate blood money to run a bunch of polls, right? My suspicion is that the reason that they're trying to knock me out is that they know that I'm probably already in a dead heat with them, but I can't afford to waste our people's small dollar donations on doing that. Let me be clear about this. Viability. They know I can beat them. Mamdani was at 2% in February before his June primary. I was at 2% in December. Mamdani didn't get to 5% until late March and April, where we are now. I was at 5% in January. Mamdani had to get to 50% in a Democrat primary. I have to get to 20% to win this primary. They are terrified because they know that I can run past both of those sets of candidates because the people are sick and tired of these two choices. Last part on this, the young generation, 18 to 30, was the group that turned out in highest numbers in Zoran's election in New York City, right? That generation is tired. And so they're afraid that across ideological divides, ethnic divides, racial divides, that young people are going to come out and vote for Butch Ware, that and oppressed and marginalized communities are going to come out and vote for Butch Ware.
Yeah, and you've been really consistent in your messaging around this, especially when it comes to not accepting any kind of PAC money, but especially AIPAC money or being funded by billionaires. But in a hypothetical where you are governor, how do you plan to lead in a system that's very much embedded within those same bipartisan structures, right?
It's a really crucial question. I think that's the reason why they're so afraid, because they know how much power the governor executive branch actually has in the state of California. So the appointment power is broad for the governor, which means that you can clean house all of those corrupt corporate regulatory folks whose job it is to funnel taxpayer dollars into the coffers of Gavin Newsom's developer buddies and those folks. We can clean those out. The governor also has broad power over the budget. So Zoran is encountering the fact that there's only so much you can do as mayor. And he keeps having to say, if Kathy Hochul did X, if Kathy Hochul did Y, right? I'm the governor in this scenario, which means that we have appointment power, we have budgetary power. Now, how do you deal with the fact that you're walking into a viper's nest, right? You've got enemies on both sides. You actually have allies on both sides. So this is the crucial part to understand. I was in Minneapolis when Jesse Ventura won the governor's mansion there, running neither as a Democrat nor as a Republican. And what happened is that those two sides are incentivized to bang on one another. But when there is somebody that doesn't belong to the logic of the system in between, then they're actually both incentivized to play nice with whoever is actually running things. And the people will have spoken, right? If we break through from the 5, maybe 8% that we might be at now, 5% documented, 8%, that's me speculating. If we break through and finish in the top two, that's going to create a one-on-one showdown, either between me and a Democrat or me and a Republican.
There's a lot there that people have maybe hesitations or doubts about. This is a huge election. We are one of the largest economies in the world. California's Latino community plays a vital role in the state, right? I think one of the biggest challenges we're having is really tapping into the Latino vote right now.
Yeah.
What would you say is the primary problem, challenge, issue that Latinos care about that your campaign focuses on?
I'm going to start with the central issue, and then I'm going to move to the other issues that I find of principal concern to the Latino community. So the first thing to understand is that the largest minority ethnic group in the state of California is white people, because the Latino population is actually the largest ethnic group. 40% of the population Latino, 34% white, 12% Asian American, 6% African American. So this is the most significant electoral bloc inside the state. We have all watched the massive escalation of the public violence of ICE raids in our communities. And I have said on the record multiple times that as governor of the state of California, I am not complying with any unconstitutional federal orders. which means that ICE is going to have to go through every lawyer and law enforcement officer in the state of California before they so much as touch a hair on the head of any California resident. And any police departments or sheriff's departments like the Santa Ana Police Department or the Los Angeles PD or LA Sheriff's Department that are caught with their hand in the cookie jar, running cover and carrying water for federally abducted kidnappings, I'm prosecuting those crooked cops because it's not their job to run cover for the feds to abduct people. So you got to understand the Democrats are not going to protect immigrant communities. And yes, that affects the Latino community primarily, but it also affects the Asian American community, also affects African and Caribbean immigrants. It affects us all because all of our civil liberties are violated when masked men can roll up armed, hop out of a minivan, refuse to identify themselves and carry you away to a second location. And this is not an abstract question for me because when I came to the state of California a number of years ago, I was blessed to meet the woman that I consider to be the most beautiful woman on the planet. Her name is Clementina Aragon. She's a first generation Mexican-American. Both her parents came to this country undocumented. And I've seen my mother-in-law, who finally got her status regularized, finally be able to cross that border to visit her brother for the first time in 23 years. And they wept for an hour because that man's border broke up her family. The same way that that man's slave trade broke up my families for generations and for the same reason, to have a fragile, easily controllable source of labor. Because you know who you never see getting taken out in those ICE raids is white boys in business suits who have hired 200 undocumented laborers. And that tells you what's really at play. And it's the reason why both Kamala said she's going to be tougher on the border than Trump. Obama was the deporter in chief. Trump, for all of the violence, is still chasing Obama's deportation records. Can't catch up with the deporter in chief. Why is there this bipartisan agreement on racist immigration policies against the Latino community? Our people, black and brown people, are the backbone of this system, and the system abuses us. And I'll tell to the Latino community what Malcolm X, my hero role model, Malcolm is literally over my shoulder at all times because I converted to Islam when I was 15 years old because I read Malcolm's autobiography. I read it cover to cover in one night and I wanted to be like Malcolm when I grew up. So I converted to Islam. What Malcolm said about the Democrats to the black community in 64, he said, "You put them first and they put you last. And that makes you a chump. That makes you a political chump." Black and brown folks in the penal system in the state of California, pre-making biscuits for KFC for 30 cents an hour inside the prison industrial complex. Wouldn't it be great to have an actual abolitionist, not somebody that just wants to abolish ICE, but somebody that wants to take away the carceral state's grip on our communities? And I'm going to tell you the last part about this. A lot of people are talking about Latinos for Trump, Latinos for Trump, and the mistakes that they made. Of course, I mean, it's nonsense to vote for open white supremacists, but it's also nonsense to vote for concealed white supremacists. Malcolm said the liberal is a fox. It bares its teeth. You think it's smiling at you, but you are on the menu. The conservative is a wolf. When it bares its teeth, it's into a vicious snarl that leaves the black man with no illusion as to where he stands. Malcolm believed that our communities are caught between two predators, Democrat and Republican, that differ only in how they hunt. One comes up to you with a sweet word, gets close to you. The other with sheer force. But you are the prey.
I also recently read a report about how this year has been one of the largest outfluxes, the biggest year for people to move out of California in a while. And one of the topics of conversation that always comes up is the cost of living here.
Yeah.
How are people, especially working class individuals who are sometimes college educated, sometimes not, but are all struggling to find affordability in this state? How are they able to maintain a lifestyle here? My guess is a lot of the people that are leaving are probably local. They're probably people that have been here a while.
Can't afford to live here no more.
Right. So what do you envision as being kind of the long-term strategy for ensuring that the people who have built up this community, have built up this state, are able to stay and continue cultivating the communities they've built here?
Yeah. The affordability crisis begins with the housing affordability. Californians are often paying 60, 70, 80, sometimes 100% of our paycheck just on rent or to cover mortgage and property taxes, those kind of things for folks that are fortunate enough to buy a home. I'll start with the housing crisis. My plan to make housing affordable again is simple and straightforward. I'm going to tax the shit out of Blackstone and BlackRock, the private equity firms that have been buying up real estate all throughout California. In some markets, they own as much as a third of the overall real estate, and they keep a bunch of properties vacant in order to artificially inflate the prices. And then they'll sell one property to themselves, buy it at a marked up rate. That sets a new precedent in that area, and they'll play games with manipulating the market in order to raise the value of their overall assets. And they price ordinary people out of both home ownership and home renting. The average median age for a home buyer in 1983 was 31 years old. That number was 56 last year. It's up to 59 this year. They're pricing everybody out. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to tax vacant properties, especially 20 or more vacant properties, 90, 95% tax rate. I'm going to tax them so hard that they can't wait to sell those back to the state for pennies on the dollar. And that becomes social housing. So social housing is not public housing, and it's definitely not Section 8. Section 8 is usually just federal handouts to slumlords who don't take care of properties. Social housing is what they have in places like Vienna, Austria, and other parts of Europe, where there's a publicly owned housing that is operated at cost, not for profit. So 60% of the housing market in Vienna is social housing, publicly owned, mixed income. Listen, I grew up in projects. I know what a concrete cage is. We're not talking about housing projects. We're not talking about public housing, we're talking about social housing. So because there's this public option in housing, it serves as a natural price control against the market. The average Viennese renter pays 25% of their monthly income in rent. So social housing is the way that we get there, and the policy that drives it is housing first. Housing first is, okay, so when you go home for the holidays, everybody eats before anybody gets seconds, right? This is that, except for housing.
Okay.
You can't have a bunch of empty properties. Right now, San Francisco has 14 vacant properties for every homeless person that sleeps on the street. Not no more. Can't have that happen no more. And what the Democrats are offering instead, they say, we need to build more housing. That's just handouts to Gavin Newsom's developer buddies, because they'll build 100 units called tenant units, affordable housing, and those will revert to market rate after 10 years. So our taxpayers just paid for them to get a free couple hundred million out of our money. And so that is all over if you don't have corporate funded. Now, last part, because the housing crisis is the key factor, you'll notice that my solution solves the problem both for renters and for first-time homeowners because it lowers the threshold for both, but it doesn't solve the problem of the price of groceries. It doesn't solve the problem of the price of gas. I want county stores and also operated at cost in every single county, because we have food deserts in rural areas where white and Latino farmers, private family farmers, can't get access to fresh fruits and vegetables, and they're the ones growing the crops. So we don't just have urban food deserts. We also have rural food deserts. We had county stores that were operated at cost, state run during the Great Depression. We are in a great recession right now. I say we bring them back. And lastly, free tuition, college education. Student loan debt does not have to be a thing. We used to have free tuition, public education in the state of California. Ronald Reagan took it away explicitly because he was fearful of a black and brown educated working class that would then fight back against the system. But what he took away in the process was not just our political organizing capacity, but he took away the principal economic driver of California's more equitable economy in that area. So instead, we've had the emergence of permanent underclasses now, right? And we can rectify that with education. I said a lot, but I'm gonna say one more thing. Universal single-payer healthcare is good for business. It's not bad for the state. We already pay 70 cents on every healthcare dollar as taxpayers that is spent on healthcare in the state of California anyway. And the other 30 cents goes to the healthcare companies who get paid to deny us care. You just take out the middleman, that you have single payer, that the state provides that, and you can cover universal single payer healthcare. Why am I mentioning this in response to a question about business and commerce and attracting people back to the state? because General Motors pays more money for its healthcare than the steel in its vehicles. If we have universal healthcare, commerce is going to run to California because they won't have to worry about healthcare and benefits. It's going to be great for business, and it will rebalance. Small business owners will have now a competitive advantage with the large corporations because small businesses usually can't compete on healthcare benefits. So we rebalance and give more economic power to those private family farms over the agribusiness, to the small business over the big monopoly. That's how we get people back to the state of California, and we make it affordable for the people that don't want to leave.
I did kind of want to wrap up the interview by talking a little bit about leadership and accountability. You've been extremely vocal about like the Epstein files, for example. And even more recently, there's been kind of this huge reconciliation of men in powerful positions exploiting their power, yep. Especially after everything that happened with Cesar Chavez.
Yep.
How would you ensure transparency and accountability in your administration and, you know, make sure that the powers that be remain in check?
So I've said many times on the record that as governor of the state of California, I would direct the attorney general to investigate every single crime that was alleged to have been committed in those Epstein files, either in the state of California or by a California resident. And by the way, any sitting governor could do that right now. But have you heard that from any Republican or Democrat governor? No. And you won't, because Team Blue and Team Red are all up in them PDF files, right? And I mean exactly what I say when I say that. There are no greens in those files. I don't have anybody that I need to protect. And let's be clear, we have to protect children from these predators. This is madness that there is no accountability, because this ruling class treats us commoners with utter contempt. They literally think that they can take our children from us, violate them, and there will be no accountability for them. We will hold them accountable. Fox does whatever kind of BS propaganda the Republicans want out on the air. CNN does equal opportunity propaganda for the ruling class as a whole. They own everything else, but we still have these elections, and that's why they're so afraid, because it just takes one election, this primary election, to take the power back. You said that I always say it. I'm Butch Ware. I'm running for governor in the state of California to bring the power back to the people. That's what the Panthers said. They said all power to the people, because all power is in the people. And the Panthers didn't think that that was just a black thing, because they were foundational in the creation of the Brown Berets, Chicano organization, in the creation of the Young Lords, Puerto Rican organization, in the creation of Asian Panthers and Young Patriots, white Appalachians who wanted the system to work for them too. Well, that's what I'm bringing to our electoral politics. We're bringing them Panther vibes back, and it ain't just the leather jackets. We're talking about mutual aid plus direct action plus electoral power. And I will protect and serve all of those people that are doing the work on the ground in community. Imagine what it would be like to have somebody built like that in the governor's mansion, and you realize why they're so afraid.
I do want to say it's clear that you're a Star Wars fan. Who's your character then? Who are you in the Star Wars universe?
I'm Luke Skywalker. I'm the new hope. I'm the new hope.
Thank you for being here and for sharing this space with us. And I look forward to see what you have in store.
Appreciate you. Thanks for making time and allowing me to lay out the case. When they ask you about Butch Ware, claro que sí. Claro que sí.
This episode of the Latino Newsletter podcast was produced by Joaquin Kotler, Juan Diego Ramirez, and Michelle Zacarias, with editorial support from Edward Wilkie. Julio Ricardo Varela edited the conversation. The music is by a cast of characters via Soundstripe. Season 2 of the Latino Newsletter podcast was made possible through individual gifts and the Latino Media Consortium.
The views and opinions expressed in this podcast are those of the guests and hosts and don't necessarily reflect those of the Latino Newsletter or its staff.